So we're on this journey around kingdom living, how life ought to be lived. And we've looked at the Beatitudes, and it started off me wanting to look at the Sermon on the Mount, and then we got stuck on the Beatitudes. And when I say stuck in a good way, because blessed are those. And we went through all of the blessings of what God has spoken blessing over us. And in terms of this process, Louise and Steve finished that off over the last couple of weeks. And Louise spoke on being pure in heart. And the pure in heart see God. Blessed are the pure in heart. And she unpacked what that means. I want to really encourage you to listen to that sermon. I know it's my wife, but she always gets more hits and more listens to her preachers than I do, which is a good thing. And part of that process is what she spoke of, I think, unearthed something in us just around the lepers and how they approached Jesus and how Jesus cleansed them and how they saw him. And so it's all on the download on our website or on our Facebook page. Listen to it if you haven't. I think it was a word in season. And then right off the back of that, Steve came in and he finished that off looking at the way that we suffer through things. But actually to do that with a rejoicing, especially when it's in consideration, when we suffer and we get persecuted because of Christ. And this morning, I'm going to be unpacking now the next part of that journey. Because remember when we started the series, and Lee, if you can push the next one, because again, it's not working, is many of us are flying upside down. And I know there's some visitors here, so for your sake, I'll tell you where I got this. It was in Dallas Willard's book, The Divine Conspiracy. He talks about this fighter jet pilot in the United States who's doing these evasive maneuvers in practice and pulled down on the stick to think that they were going to go up. And what happened was they went straight into the ground. And the reason was they were flying upside down and they weren't aware of it. And I think many of us as Christian believers, and in South Africa in particular, we are flying upside down. We are not flying the way and living out the life that we ought to be living. And the reason for it is because we have a wrong perception, a wrong understanding of what this life is that we're called to in the context of the kingdom of God. And so hence, we started this series on the Beatitudes and the Sermon on the Mount. And so let's read the text. Salt and light. Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. So off the back of the Beatitudes, blessed are you, blessed are those. He comes into this and he says, you are the salt of the earth. Notice that, you are. Not you might be, not you could be, no, you are. Every single one of us who believe in Christ, we are the salt of the earth. Whether you believe it or not, whether you live it out, we are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds. And I put in brackets their salt because the salt is talking about our deeds. It's about what we do. So it's interesting that it says, let your light shine before others that they may see your saltiness and glorify your Father in heaven. You are the salt of the earth. I am the salt of the earth. We are the salt of the earth. What is salt then? Because if Jesus is speaking about salt, what is the context? What is the historical context that Jesus is speaking into regarding salt? Well, salt, thank you for asking, is that salt was a valuable traded commodity. It was as good as money in your hands if you had salt. And you would go and you would trade it. And there were many uses for it. But the two primary uses, number one was it was a preservative. And number two, it was a flavor enhancer, which we use today. And we actually use it as a preservative in our things like biltong and those kind of things. But what is Jesus trying to tell us? He's saying the world is decaying. My kingdom is the answer. And the way that we preserve it is if you are the salt and you go and you're my kingdom carriers, take it into the earth today and preserve my kingdom in this world today because it is decaying. And actually add the flavor of my kingdom into every atmosphere, every place that you go, every place your foot shall tread. Now let me ask you this question. Who knows what salt is from a chemistry perspective? What is it? Sodium chloride. And what is the combination of sodium chloride? What is it called? Okay, it's called NaCl. Okay, great. So we have a sodium ion and we have a chlorine ion. But what is so significant about that in the context of what Jesus is saying? Come on, you scientists out there. Yeah, there's a positive and negative on one level. Actually, what happens is if you know your science, and I'm not a great scientist, and my high school days are way behind me, but you've got two electrons in two of these elements, and when they come together, the one electron disappears, it becomes positively charged, and they are so closely knit, it's like two magnets that are pulled together that you can't pull them apart. So to lose saltiness, you actually can't. Salt can't lose its saltiness. It's impossible. Because this ionic bond that's there is so like entrenched in each other, they hold on to each other like two lovers, they're not going to let go. So if salt's not going to lose, what is Jesus trying to say? If you can't lose your saltiness, then why is Jesus saying, well, if you lose your saltiness, we throw underfoot? Which, remember, what happened then was on the temple steps when it got cold, when salt wasn't really useful anymore, they threw it on the temple steps so people wouldn't slip. And I shared on that last year sometime. I'm not going to go into it. But what are they talking about? What is he talking about? See, salt can be diluted. So we lose our saltiness when we allow other things to break in on the gospel, on the truth of who we are and who God is, and on the gospel that God has set before us, and we allow these ideologies, these cultures, these other religions to break in on us. And it dilutes us. When I was a young Christian, I remember I went through this phase where I said, surely God cannot send people to hell. I guarantee there's people in this room now that have a universalistic understanding. God can't do that. I mean, surely he's not going to send that person to hell. That's a good person. And I went through that whole process of trying to work out, you know what? Number one, God doesn't send people to hell. People choose to go to hell. Jesus has made the way for people to get onto the pathway to eternity back into relationship with him. He's done it all for us. Remember, he takes our sin and he gives us his righteousness. It's like the most amazing deal that we could ever have. And yet what we do is we allow those things to trade on us and we land up in a universalism, and Jesus is no longer the way, truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him. And actually, no, all roads lead to Rome, and we let people live out their lives along here, not as they ought to live, and they miss out on what they choose to live in hell, which was never made for human beings. It was made for the fallen angels. We miss out on who God is. We lose the truth because those lies trade in on the truth of who God is. And what about light? Lee, if you can give me the next one. See, the thing about this is in John, it talks about John chapter 1. It says Jesus is the light of the world. We're not the light of the world, even though it says, seems to indicate that in this text. No, what it is we're more like the moon. Jesus is the sun. And excuse the pun. But Jesus is the sun who shines on the moon, who reflects the light of the sun onto the earth. That's who we are. If we're not with Jesus, guess what? There's no moon. We cannot reflect something that we haven't actually seen. And so if we're not with Jesus, if we're not in his presence like Moses and displaying the reflection of Jesus in our lives, then we can't be the light of this world. We cannot be the one who is displaying Jesus to the rest of this world and reflecting his goodness into this world. So what Jesus is saying is the light, this world is dark, ladies and gents. I think if you don't know that by now, you just have to look at the news. And God is calling us to shine the light of the kingdom, shine the light of Jesus through our own lives in reflecting who Jesus is into this world and shine light into the dark places. Why? Because this world needs the kingdom. It needs the preservation of the kingdom. It needs the flavor of the kingdom to come in. So, Gary, where are you going with this? So, I've been on a bit of a journey looking at some cultural commentaries. And so this morning is going to be a little bit of a history lesson. I'm not a historian. Some of these I agree with their views. Some of these, it's just the way it is around the world today. And so I'm going to explain to you where we are in terms of a culture and ideology that seems to be crashing in on Christendom, that seems to be crashing in on the kingdom, which seems to be crashing in on the church. And what are we doing? Are we allowing those ideologies, that culture, those different understandings, whereas Buddhism, it's New Age, it's all of this stuff, to come into our context and dilute the gospel and make us less salty than what God has called us to be? Or are we standing our ground and becoming what he's called us to be? So what is happening in our world today? Well, I found this podcast by Mark Sayer. I know I've sent it to some of you guys. Mark Sayer is a pastor in Melbourne, Australia, of all places. I mean, I know what good can come from Australia, but this seems to be a good guy. And he is a cultural commentator, and he's written a whole bunch of books, which are amazing. And I've read some of the writings that he has done. And what he does is he commentates on where we are from a cultural point of view, where we've been and where we're going. And it's just, it opens up your eyes, because if we are to be the salt of the earth, if we don't realize what's breaking in on us and what's proximate, then we land up joining forces with these things, which can actually harm us going down the line and not be the salt that God's called us to be. So let's have a look at the landscape, this cultural landscape that we've seen over the last little while. And I'm saying last little while, probably going back a century or two, but I'm going to try to do it. And by the way, last night at about 8 o'clock, I looked at my notes and I said, I'll have you here all morning if I preach what I wanted to preach to you. So I've had to split this talk into two. And I managed to do that. And so some of it, hopefully you're going to be salivating at the end of the saying, I want more. And so it's going to be like a soap opera where I'm going to say, okay, come back next week. But the socialism, this leftism, everyone knows what I'm talking about. When I talk about leftism and I talk about socialism and I talk about a liberal kind of view on earth and what people are doing, and from a political point of view, from a just living their lives out perspective. But often what happens with this socialistic, even communistic perspective, it just starts with what we call an economic vision. What do you mean, Gary? Well, it normally has this root in justice. We want to see justice. And you know, in this community, we want to see justice. We want to see economic and social justice in South Africa because of all the injustice of the past. Big tick. Well done. That's a good thing to do. Do you know Karl Marx was Jewish? And he understood in the context of all of what was going down in terms of when he looked at the Old Testament, he saw things like the year of Jubilee. What an amazing principle. That after every 50 years, what you would do is you would take the debts of that generation and expunge them, and you would give them their land back. Because maybe their parents had to sell the land to pay for a debt or whatever it might be. So great economic justices, great economic vision. But you know what the problem with Karl Marx was? He did it in a humanistic view. And he did it without God. And he didn't understand the impact of original sin in terms of the context in which we live. And so what socialism stroke communism stroke this whole leftist liberalism does is what it does, it becomes a religion for itself, and it wants the kingdom of God without God. There are many people walking around, even Christians, who want the kingdom of God in their life, but they want it without God. Because they don't want God telling them what to do. I've got great mates out there doing amazing work from a social justice perspective. But you know what? They've lost sight of God, and it's all become their own effort. And guess what? They're burning out. Of course, we need to be involved in social justice. Of course, do we need to make sure that as Christians, that's part of what we do. But if that becomes all of what we do, and we lose sight of the King and His kingdom, that thing breaks in on us and lands up turning us in and actually resulting in the very thing that we're fighting against. And we start to become bigots, and we start to point our fingers towards other people because they're not thinking the same as we are. See, they become dead works. We've heard it spoken of. It's part of our foundation things. Dead works. What are dead works? They are things done without the faith in God. They are things done, well, I think this needs to be done, God. You're not doing it, so I'm going to do it for you. And then Steve spoke about the thing at the end of the consummation of this age, when we get to that place. 1 Corinthians 3:15 talks about it. And we get to the consummation of the age, and the rewards get given to us. And they get measured up against the fire of God. And everything is wood, hay, and stubble. Everything done outside of faith just gets obliterated. And only those things that are of God, that are done in faith, remain. Are we a people that are listening to what God says, despite the fact that we say, but God should be doing that? And if we get caught up into the social justice and we miss God on it, we land up missing what God wants to do, and we don't become salt anymore. We actually start to fight against the things that He's called us to. See, the problem with this liberalism and the socialism is what it does is it has a deep suspicion of power and power structures. I guarantee you in this room today, there are people who have deep suspicions about power, about authority, because they believe that authority has messed everything up. Even with our own government, we look at Jacob Zuma and we say, he's the problem. No, he's part of the problem, but he's not the problem. The ANC are part of the problem, but they're not the problem. See, if we get rid of these authority structures, let's get rid of them. Let's get rid of Jacob Zuma. Let's get rid of the ANC, because when we get rid of them, we're going to usher in the utopia into South Africa and everything's going to be okay. See, people only, they want to be free because they want to be free to define themselves rather under what God has put in place in terms of a moral structure. You know, people say, oh, we don't want structure. We don't want authority. Okay, well then let's just move our roads off. Now, we know the taxis don't follow the rules of the road. And that's on the government for not enforcing that. But without the roads, what it would be chaos. Have you ever traveled? I mean, we've got some, where's Paul? Is he here? Paul, in Nigeria, hey? How's the traffic there compared to here? Hey, I've been into Abidjan, into Ivory Coast. I've been into Liberia. There's no rules. People just go, okay, those are the roads, but there's no structure to what's going down. God has put in place structure. But we look at that authority and we don't want the authority because I want to be free to define myself and escape all the micro powers around me and I want to be me. My individual, it's me and Jesus. That's not the way God, we've heard. God has said, no, you are made from a community for a community. And we have a testimony from Derek this morning around that. How's this? And just before the French Revolution, the French philosophers were quoted as saying this. We will force you to be free. And we see that even in our day today. We see the liberalists going, we are going to force you to think like us, and we're going to force you to be free. And then you have Napoleon going on his march to liberate people, and he lands up oppressing them. So the very thing that you're trying to do is lift the lid and give people freedom, but what you do is you land up oppressing them because they're not doing what you want them to do. And you become the very thing that you're fighting against. We see that even in our own country. We've seen that with Russia. We've seen that in all these socialistic, communistic environments where they try and control everything. Yet Jesus comes to a centurion man. That's what he's called in Matthew 8. And this man's servant is sick and he understands authority. And he says, Jesus, you don't need to come to my home. Just say the word and I know that he will be healed. Here's Jesus' response. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed. Not many times Jesus gets amazed in the New Testament. It says Jesus was amazed and he said to those following him, truly I say to you, I have not found anyone in all Israel with such great faith. So when we understand, like Steve Stabro said this morning around Romans 13 and all of that, God has put those authority structures into play. Do we have the faith to believe who God is? And despite what's going on along with Jacob Zuma and despite all of those things, of course, must this man come down? Yes, he's all about himself. The ANC are all about themselves. They are just taking everything for themselves. But you know what? The previous white government was exactly the same. So where do we have the authority structures in place that are godly and put into place? Do we trust God enough to be doing what he's doing, despite of what we see, despite our fear, despite of what we see around us? See, when we trust and believe in God, we become conduits of his kingdom. We become the salt that he's speaking of. And we preserve his kingdom in our context. And we become the light to shine the light into dark places and illuminate all the corruption that's going around. And you know what? God is the one who takes those people away from their positions of authority. And he shines his light through us. And we don't do it through weapons and killing people and smashing people, but we do it in this passive way. But it's not passive because it's bringing the kingdom of God spiritually into those contexts and changing the atmospheres. See, part of dismantling authority structures we see in our world today is that we abandon marriage. We abandon marriage. Look at all the West at the moment. Let's abandon marriage. Let's abandon male hierarchy. And I'm not talking about male hierarchy, which comes in. But in the context of a home, a husband is head of the home who looks after his family and treats her like Christ treats the church, lays his life down for her. That's the hierarchy I'm talking about. You know, the Karl Marx believed that marriage was ultimately an oppressive thing that came through capitalism. But when you take away marriage, what it does is it rips apart a nation and it makes it weak. Well, what do you mean, Gary? Well, Louise and I had applied for immigration to Australia and our kids were the right age and all of that and we turned it down. We were running away from safer. We went running to something. And I then met up with a guy that I used to work with who then in Adelaide while I was on ministry, which was on another thing. And we're in Adelaide and I meet up with this guy and I have coffee with him. And he's much older than me, but his kids were the right age. And he says, the only reason we got in is that Australia had at that stage, probably about 10 years ago, had a part of their population, 1 million that was missing to be able to sustain the economic growth. Why? Because Australians are not procreating anymore. Because they've got this individualistic lifestyle. They don't want kids. They want to procreate and have. So what they do is they now are bringing immigrants into their country in order to sustain the individualistic lifestyles and the economic growth. And that's across the world in most first world countries. But in the Muslim countries, what's happening? 5, 6 kids exploding What do you think is going to happen in 30, 40 years' time? But we sit there and we go, no, let's just push away marriage. Let's push away God's design and let's do our own thing. And even in the context of Christendom, it's so easy to go, oh, I said yes to you 5 years ago. Kind of don't like you anymore. So, you know, let's get divorced. Now, I understand. I'm not going to point fingers at people in terms of their divorce situations. But the reality is the statistics are way too high. They're not all because of somebody just saying, I don't believe in Jesus, I'm out of here. There's way too much individualistic, all about my selfish needs, as opposed to me coming and serving my spouse the best way I can. So here's the thing. Socialism, this liberalism, what it causes is a disconnection between sex and procreation, and ultimately destroys sex itself. Because it just becomes about being free to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. And what happens is it moves from the social economic vision to this moral vision and this genderless society, and then we redefine sexuality, which is exactly what's happening in our world today. Let's redefine it. Oh, I don't feel like being a man anymore, so I'm going to go and become a woman. So now, because you take certain parts of your body and you take them off or add them on or whatever you want to call it, now that makes you somebody else. I'm not trying to make fun of it. I'm saying that's the mentality that we find ourselves in. But what about those people who really struggle with their sexual orientation? There have been people in this community, there have been friends that I've walked a long road with because they've struggled with their gender identity, with that sexual orientation. They've got a same-sex attraction. Now, for me, I don't understand it. I can't process that. A guy is really not attractive to me. But for another guy, he may be. And that's where we find ourselves in this place within the context of Christianity where we become way too judgmental around those things. I'm not talking about practicing stuff. I'm not talking about action. I'm talking about people who have this and we go, oh, you can't have that. But they have this attraction to the same sex. What do we do as a community in that context? Here's some answers to really an extremely complex question that I've just raised. The Ethiopian eunuch encounters Philip. And what happens is this man has been degendered. He's been robbed of his masculinity, robbed of his sexuality. And he sits in there and he's searching the scriptures and he's reading the book of Isaiah. There's no question which verse he's reading. Let me read it to you. Isaiah 56, verse 4 to 5 says, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbath, who choose what pleases me and hold fast to my covenant, to them I give within my temple, I will give within my temple and its walls a memorial and a name better than my sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that will endure forever. Wow. So here's this eunuch. And what God is saying is, the genitals that you have or don't have do not make you who you are. That is not who you are. Who you are is who I've made you to be. And so that's actually irrelevant in this context. And you know what? When you follow my way and you obey what I've called you to, I will set you apart and even set you above my sons and daughters. Wow. I know men and women who, despite what they have, they feel inside of them, through nature or nurture, I don't want to get into all of that, they have an attraction towards the same sex, and yet they've broken through and they've lived the lives that God has been pleased with because they've obeyed his word. And look at the result. Is it possible? Well, I've seen it work. But you know what the key was? A contemplative life and every day with Jesus. And let's move away from same-sex attraction. Let's look at heterosexual. Guys and girls, we are not going to move into the things that God has for us unless we deal. Because in our culture, sex has become something that has been traded along many levels. And I'm going to get into that in a moment. And if we don't deal with our sexuality and every day with Jesus, that thing gets perverted into our world today. And it destroys marriages. And it destroys relationships. So, what happens with this whole socialistic uprising that started many years ago? In 1989, the Berlin Wall comes down and everybody declares, capitalism is won! We don't have to worry about these communists anymore. They finished. Socialism's dead. Capitalism is shown to be the best thing. And liberal democracy wins. And we're all shouting from the rooftops, yes, yes, yes. And so there's no more conflict. We have this unipolar situation. And America's on the top of the pile. And so the West all looks at this and goes, that's what we need to become. And so we all think the same. And you know what? All you need is a great education and the right government in place. And we're sorted. Then what happens? Well, Alan Greenspan gets up, United States kind of financial guy, and he says, you know what? As globalization starts up, we are going to have unending economic growth. And we all buy into that myth. And then in 2008, what happens? Crash, bang, boom. But then what happened in 2001? An airplane flies into the global trade center. Or World Trade Center. Interesting choice. Why? Because not everybody believes the way the West believes in their utopian thinking that this is the way the world should be running. So capitalism maybe isn't all of what it's called out to be. People start saying, the world has gone mad. Who remembers September 11, 2001? Jordan was 6 months old. I'm sitting in my lounge going, what have I done? I've brought a child into this crazy world. But ladies and gents, let me categorically say the world has always been mad. We just see it 5 minutes later on our cell phones. See, the problem with capitalism is, you know, last century, these philosophical thinkers, what they did is in the middle of last century, they said, well, what's going to happen is the end of history is going to come because humanity is going to become bored. And they're going to become bored, and because there's no desire for meaning and whatever else, we're going to turn into animals because there's nothing left to struggle through. You know, to be truly human is to struggle. And yet what we do in our lives today is we stop the struggle and the suffering that produces something in us. You know, God doesn't cause these things. Hopefully you hear my heart, but my heart breaks when I hear that a child's been lost. But you know what? You've got a child in eternity that you're going to spend eternity with. How's that? Because you're a believer, there's a future with that child. Now, I know you've been robbed of that time now. But God has done some amazing things in the context of struggle and strife. In the context of we find ourselves in these things, and what we do with our kids, we stop them from struggling. They make mistakes and then we cover it up for them. They leave things at home when they're supposed to have taken them to school. Okay, once or twice you help them out, but like a month later, if you're still taking your kids' sports clothes that they left at home and covering for them, and not allowing them to go through the struggle and strain of having to do PT in their school clothes all sweaty, when are they going to learn? Yesterday I'm at rugby. Now, you know, you guys know me who are around. I'm way too competitive. So I'm watching my boy play rugby and Dylan, and he's doing great things. And they play against the side who's a lot bigger than them. And what had happened in the first game was there were a lot of illegal tackling, a lot of shoulder barging, actually hurt Dylan's neck on the one side thing, and some, a lot of high tackles. So I go up to the ref and I say, look, as a dad, I'm asking you. I know to actually ref this is like refing. It's impossible. I mean, you know. Hey. So, you know, I'm not going to moan at you for missing stuff. That's just the way it is. It's just, if you've seen it's like ants. But please, can you watch the high tackles? Because actually there were some really bad ones in the last match. And the no-arm tackles, because actually our kids are going to get hurt if that's the case. And this other side, I mean, Dylan got... like this guy grabbed his neck and twisted it and threw him into the ground. That was one. Happened again. Third one, fourth one, I couldn't hold it in. Come on, are you crazy? Like, but there was no penalty for that. The kid just went back to his place and played on and did it again. So afterwards I went up to him and I said, please help me understand what is happening here. In global rugby, that one particularly would have been a red card and those would have been yellow cards. The kid or the player would have been off the field for a period of time or for the rest of the match. What are we teaching our kids? That this is okay. So I can smash this kid as hard as I can, give him a blood nose, smash him into the ground, and I just go back and keep playing the game. Now, I'm saying there's an example that happened for me yesterday, but we do this to our kids all the time. We stop them from facing the consequences of actions and the struggle and suffering, and then we create these kids that go out into the world, and the world hits them, and they go, I can't deal with this. Look at the world today. And look what's happening around us. Why are so many, I mean, the leader of Linkin Park commits suicide this week. And I know there's some stuff around that and they're thinking maybe it's murder. But what about the guy from NXS? What about the guy from Spoon Man? What's it? Help me. Soundgarden. Those are just musicians in this last few months. What about Kurt Cobain? What about these major actors? You know what? They've got nothing to live for anymore. They've got everything that opens and shuts. They live in these multi-billion dollar, kind of, probably billion, but million dollar homes. They've got everything that opens and shuts. Whatever they want, they get. And they take their lives. Why? Because there's no meaning in life. Why? Because they've come up to a moment where maybe there's a strain in a relationship. Maybe a wife's left them or a husband's left them. And so now they go, oh, I've got nothing left to live for. Let me take my life. What about Australia? Highest suicide rate amongst teenagers. Why? Because Australia has got all this cotton wool stuff that keeps their kids all within this thing, and they get up to 15, 16, and they go, what is there to live for? I've got nothing to live for. Why must I do that? What about all these Western white men who are joining ISIS? Because they're living in a capitalistic society where they're becoming bored. Because everything's done for them. There's nothing left to live for. They are built for struggle and fight. So they go, where can I don't like this. Let me go find out where I can fight against what I'm living in. That's the world that we're living in. I'm not trying to get you to fear all of this because it's not fear. And I'm going to get to the good things in a moment. I can see everybody's going, oh my word. You know, let's look my wrist with a bus ticket now. And then we've got the internet. It's amazing. I can get everything on my phone, on my smartphone. And you know what? I'm overconnected. I've got this hyperconnectivity. I can see that. I can see this. I can do this. I can do that. I can see this person. And we have all these ideologies out there. And we look at them every day. And we start to question the truth of God in terms of what we're doing. Why? Because we believe what the internet says. And you know what? I know people, not only in this community, but other communities where you listen to guys who are big, amazing preachers in the States, but how about going and spending some time there? How about seeing them with their faults and their challenges? Now, we'll listen to what they say, which may or may not be right, but how about going and living in that community? How about giving yourself to that community? How about seeing his failures and his shortcomings too? I know mine are glaringly obvious, and so thank you for still sitting around. But this hyperconnectivity is crazy because we can be in a bank queue. We can be anywhere and we entertain ourselves while we wait. Louise woke up at 4 a.m. last week before she preached. God was speaking to her and she went into her study and she walks into her study and there's Ella on her iPad at 4 a.m. in the morning. We've now had to take her iPad away from her. Why? Because even our kids, it's just, let's get connected. Let's get involved. Let's get screen time. And, I've got these amazing friends on Facebook. You just see where they all travel. They travel to amazing places. And they love me because they like me all the time. Now, how about having some across the table conversation? And we don't like that. Let's just post the best pictures. It flabbergasts me going through Monte Cassino. That's where Louise and I often have our date nights. And how many people are taking selfies. Not one. But they take like five. I don't know, maybe it's more than that. But it's like, oh, no, that one. Nah. Let me get a better smile, better picture. And then everyone thinks that that's what that person looks like. And then when you see them in real life, you go, what? And in terms of sexuality, you know what happens in our capitalistic economic system? It meets our consumeristic desires and needs. And we land up with the highest grossing industry in the world called pornography. Why? Because we're in this consumeristic thing. We're in capitalism. We are bored. So where do I find some form of entertainment and some form of excess? Well, I'm built for desire. I'm built for these things. And instead of being a Christian hedonist that Steve has told us about, no, I become a hedonist by looking for things to make me feel good about myself. And therefore, the sexuality thing just explodes into consumerism across the world. Here's what Paul says, the Apostle Paul, not Paul Elliott. 1 Thessalonians 4, he says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. I guarantee you none of you would have got that if I had asked you what was coming. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. You should mind your own business. Sure, that would be good for some of us. And work with your hands, that would also be good for some. Just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. There's being salt, isn't it? So many of us are living such loud, such crazy lives, but actually Paul's saying, no, drum it down. Why? Because in our entertaining, busy lives, what happens is we miss God in this whole thing because all we want to be is entertained. We want the sensationalism. We want this hedonistic life. And instead of finding satisfaction in God, we're finding satisfaction in all these other things. And we lose our saltiness. See, unfortunately, often Christians are not seen to be too different from the world out there. Because we just get caught up in the worldly things. Martin Lloyd-Jones, if you can, Lee. Martin Lloyd-Jones says the following. The glory of the gospel is that when the church is absolutely different from the world, she invariably attracts it. It's then that the world is made to listen to her message, though she may hate it at first. We are called to be other than. Gabriel's testimony, being other than. Being in that moment, God, I need your help. Where do I plug this in? Because if it doesn't work, I'm in trouble. The testimony, I asked God and God spoke. What? On a piece of wire? Yes, on a piece of wire. Oh, Gary, you... No, but the next time, oh. I'm looking at this person's life and I'm seeing the saltiness of it. And at first I thought you were an idiot, but hold on a second. What's going on? Why are you so calm right now? We've got 35,000 people outside there. And I'm pretty sure inside he wasn't calm. But you know what? God in the darkest moments does the most profound things. We are in one of the darkest moments in our present history. There are so many things falling around us. Whether we want to look at Brexit, whether we want to look at the States, whether we want to look at our own country, we are looking at a place where we go, hold on a second, there is so much that can go wrong. And I want to stop it for a moment and I want to ask you, what was the difference between the French Revolution in the 1700s versus what happened in the UK? Because at the beginning of the 17th century, what was happening? There was moral decay of absolute note. Things were going pear-shaped on every level, both in France and in England. What happened in France? The French Revolution, which just smashed the country into civil war and people got beheaded and killed and it was a mess. What happened in England? What happened in England? There was a revolution, but what was it? The church rose up. And why did the church rise up? Because in 1703, a man called John Wesley was born. So we talk about salt and light. Look at the difference. Both in a place where they were absolutely looking at the darkest era of their country's existence. This one, where France went through it and are still recovering from this day. England, the place of my ancestors. John Wesley, born 1703, steps in, loves God, preaches the gospel into the church. The church rises up and the same thing doesn't happen. What are we doing as individuals? Because we are the church. Are we standing up and being like the John Wesleys of this world by being the salt of the earth, preserving the kingdom, allowing the flavor of the kingdom to come into every sphere of influence that we have to rise up so that we don't have what everyone predicts South Africa would be? When I've got friends who have gone and emigrated and they go, no, we left this country because we're going to come exactly like Zimbabwe and we're going to this and we're going to that. I go, footsack, man. No, seriously, footsack. It's my best Greek term that I know at the moment. Footsack, because actually our country, no, we're going to get, the Christians are going to rise up. The church is going to rise up. It is actually our finest hour. Let's not shrink back. Let's not go, oh, let's close the doors, let's button down the hatches, let's buy baked beans and get into our bunkers. No. It's the church's reawakening. We don't change society by trying to legalize Christianity. If I ever achieve a tenth of what Angus Buchan has, I'll be happy. But I do disagree with what he preached on that prayer day. I don't want a Christian government. I don't want Christianity to be legalized. Seriously, I do not want that. We've seen it in the past. It does not work. See, the overarching atmosphere here, which we are called to disciple the nations. Disciple. To be apprentices of Jesus and disciple the nations. Focus on the gospel. You see, if we focus on the gospel and we focus on Jesus, when I'm looking at Jesus face to face, the book that was mentioned earlier, What happens is I start to exude, I start to show like Moses, the light of Jesus into the world. I become the salt, the saltiness of the what God wants to use in me. I'm not focusing on being salt and light. I'm not focusing on being a Christian like, oh, what must I do in this moment? No, I'm focusing on Jesus. I'm engaging Jesus. I'm with the one who is love, who is salt, who is the light. And I become that in the context in which I'm in. And because of that, because of Jesus, because of my engagement of him, the salt and light and the preservation of who I am. I love what Michael Eaton said. He said, you know, so many people are, you know, do you follow the law? Don't you follow the law? Is it fulfilled? Is it not? Whatever. He says, don't worry about that. Allow the Holy Spirit who's inside you to lead you. Walk in step with the Spirit and you will accidentally fulfill the law. In the same way, God is calling us to focus on Jesus, to focus on his kingdom, to focus on his ways, because then we are the salt, we are the light, and we go out into the world and we make a difference. And England, South Africa will be different. We won't land up like the French Revolution. We'll land up more like England. And I've got to the end of my sermon, and hopefully I've added, because I haven't even touched on the stuff like globalism and the ideologies that are coming into our world today. And actually, if we don't understand them, we are not able to be the salt and light into the context in which we find ourselves. But God's calling us to stand up, to be other than, to be the salt and light that he's called us to be, so that we change our country one little bit at a time, one person at a time. As a community of Lifehouse, may we be that. Both from the poor to the rich, from the needy to the sick to the healthy. Let's be the salt and light that God's called us to be. Let's stand.